It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Echoes. We'd like to introduce you to our program, today's guest, and the unseen but present map created by our guest, who is Professor Michael Krause. First, the program. It's one program named Chinook, and it comes to you in three parts. Today, Chinook Echoes, with Michael Krause of the Alaska Native Language Center. We'll discuss the study of native languages in Alaska. We'll also be referring to the map, which is distributed by the Native Language Center. The map shows all the native languages spoken in Alaska. It shows them by region, by language family, and by name. It also shows how many people actually speak the language, and even more specifically, it shows the extent to which the language has been passed on to the younger generation. I borrowed that phrase from Dr. Krause, particularly because transmitting native languages to native children is one of the most keenly felt responsibilities of the Native Language Center. The center was established by the state legislature in 1972. At the same time, it passed the Bilingual Education Bill, and legislature assigned the center a number of very important duties.
The first responsibility of a Native Language Center is to study all native languages of Alaska. This does not distinguish between the biggest and the littlest, or the most important or the least important. It is the purpose of the Alaska Native Language Center is as a research center for the study and, I would say, documentation of all the languages native to Alaska. The study and documentation involves field research, writing down the words and discovering the grammatical characteristics of the native languages so that they can be preserved. And by preserved, this is where the purposes of the Native Language Center goes far beyond that of simply studying. If I were asked to summarize what our purpose is, the best I think I could do is to say that we are here to preserve and maintain and encourage the development and survival of Alaska Native languages.
Preservation would only go so far. You said maintain. That implies using it. It's not just enough to preserve it. You have to speak it, you have to use it, you have to work with it, I suppose.
That's right. The one thing is to preserve the language in books on a shelf, something like preserving a specimen in a museum, which is an awful lot better than letting it disappear without a trace. Nevertheless, it would be much nicer yet and ideal if it were, insofar as it is possible, to help the native languages to stay alive, literally, in the way that they've traditionally been alive, by having generations pass on this heritage to the next generation by speaking the language.
Now, is that part of your charter? Is that part of that youth, part of what you're required to do or set up to do?
Not explicitly, only implicitly and as part of our own philosophy. The other explicit responsibilities that we have from the legislature are the development of literatures in the language, which requires establishment of alphabets, establishment of literacy, and then the recording and writing and printing and dissemination of texts in the languages, both for the schools, which have bilingual education programs, and for the population at large, the native population at large. A third major responsibility is to develop training programs for native speakers of the language to become the scholars and teachers of their language for the world, and particularly, of course, their own native communities, and especially, of course, for the bilingual school programs. Since this bill was passed at the same time as the bilingual program was passed, but bilingual bill was passed, one of our responsibilities is to help develop training programs to train native speakers of these languages to be the teachers to their own people.
Now, do you develop the programs, or do you actually bring the people in to learn the programs and do the teaching?
There's no way with our state budget that we could be expected either to print, write and print all of the materials needed for the bilingual programs for all the schools, or any way with that budget, with our other responsibilities, that we could begin to provide all the training necessary for all the native teachers around the state. This is a totally new thing, something that has been virtually forbidden for the last 70 years. The training of in the old Russian days and in the early missionary days, there were native language bilingual programs in the educational institutions in this state. But since about 1910 and until about 1970, this was basically was severely suppressed and forbidden. So to train the people who for 70 years have had no training at all and to start to catch up would be an impossible task on a budget anything like as limited as ours.
When you came in here, you were a little discouraged about budget, but you said that takes away from the conversation of the romance of language. I can see that budget is important, but I'd also like to discuss the romance of the language. What is romantic about these languages? What is the I'd almost say passion about trying to preserve these things?
Well, to go back to where you started, I'm glad that you changed the word that I had first used from romance to more like passion. It's not exactly romantic. But I think that it certainly is a passion with me and people who feel what I do, that native languages of Alaska, like the native languages of everywhere, including the native languages of England and the native languages of France or any part of the world, are of the utmost importance for man's spiritual future. These are whole ways of thinking, whole ways of living that are embodied in these languages and that go very deep into the soul of a people. There are, in fact, maybe in some ways really are the soul of a people. And when you lose something like that from the world, as you do, there are whole species of animals that have become extinct and there are whole civilizations who have become extinct, and this continues, that it is a tragedy for the world, although it's surely true that this has been the pattern of history.
I think a history lesson might be in order. I believe I read a quotation from you in a newspaper or somewhere that a lot of languages, that Alaska is the birthplace of languages, of several languages.
A language is not exactly like a life. It can be snuffed out and end, but it doesn't get born overnight. It develops slowly over the period of centuries and thousands of years. One language, form of language, slowly changes, turns into something different, although its roots are very obvious for many hundreds of years and sometimes thousands of years. And an ancestral language any language will in different places end up getting spoken differently, more and more so over the years. So after several thousand years, the descendants of the original language will sound totally different from each other, although you will still be able to see the similarities, and linguists in particular can trace these similarities back 5,000-6,000 years, way beyond any written history. In Alaska, we have two major language families, each with several different modern descendants. But the point needs to be made first is that the Eskimo Aleut languages and the Athabaskan Eyak Tlingit languages are just the latest families to have rented the place. And I say that a little lightly, but of course that's only in a much huger scheme of history and prehistory that we are never, or probably will never, understand much more about.
Now, are these languages that exist now, are they refinements of that root language, or?
Well, I never would say that the languages are getting worse or they're getting better in themselves, but or getting more refined or more or less refined, but they're constantly changing and turning into something else that is always equally sophisticated, always equally polished and equally beautiful and complex. If God did create anything equal, it was languages. All languages are of equal beauty, equal complexity, equal regularity, equal value in that sense as systems of human thought and the souls of a people.
Language, the soul of a people, and a passion with Professor Michael Kraus. In the following weeks, we'll learn how some native languages were lost and perhaps how a few of them can be saved. For Chinook Echoes, this is Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. We're going to look at a changing pattern in Native and rural education. There is a growing demand for college-educated Natives to work in the corporations, to run programs administered by the nonprofit corporations, and to work in the school districts. And there is a new study published by the Institute of Social and Economic Research that finds that in some cases, rural education is not serving the needs of Native students who go on to college. Psychology professor Judith Kleinfeld is the author of the study. Her purpose was to find out how to help students succeed in college, and what she discovered was that students need to be better prepared with academic skills before they leave high school.
There were three common ideas why kids didn't do well in college. These were suggested to us all largely by professors of students whom we interviewed before we started the study. The first idea was that many kids, not all, but many, didn't come to the university with the kinds of academic skills they needed. They hadn't learned enough in high school to do well in college. And no matter what the college did in terms of more English preparation and study skills and so on, it just couldn't make the difference. The second factor was goals. A lot of people said that very frequently students, again, both Native and non-Native, just didn't know why they were in college. They didn't know what they had come for. They didn't have an idea of a career. So the idea was that where kids had clear goals, especially clear career goals, they did better. And the third idea was that, again, this had to do more with the Native kids, that there was a lot of unfriendliness on the campus and a lot of prejudice. And kids just weren't comfortable. And they got homesick and they didn't have enough friends and they wanted to go home. So those were the three ideas we started out with.
Now, I would have suggested number three would have been an important element, that being kind of uprooted, the uncomfortable feeling would be enough to send me home or would distract me enough from my studies that I may not want to stay. I would put that up as an important element. And your study, which is is called Alaska Natives and College Success suggests something a little different.
Suggests is exactly the right word to use. One of the important things to remember about research is that it doesn't prove anything, and all you get is suggestions. My money, when I started this, was just where yours was. I thought that the friendliness of the campus was a real problem, and it may be that it is, and we missed it. Research can go wrong, so I'm certainly open to that possibility. But what we found was that kids who at least said, and they may have had other feelings that they weren't saying, but kids who said that the university was friendly and they felt comfortable did no better or worse than kids who felt uncomfortable. In other words, the friendliness just didn't seem to be that important a factor. But when you stop to think about it, there may have been a reason for that. First of all, this campus has made some real progress in the last few years with these special services for village students. It provides a lounge, and a lot of kids congregate there, and they have a lot of activities. There's also many more Native students on campus. The year that we did the study, in 74, close to a quarter of the freshman class was Native. So it wasn't the case in the 70s as it was in the 60s, with a few students arriving on the campus and there was nothing here for them and no way to find friends. There are a lot of kids and a lot of activities. The other reason that the friendliness of the university might not have been an important factor was that a lot of the Native kids who came to the campus had gone to Anchorage High through the boarding home program, to West High or East High, or Lathrop, or they'd been to big boarding schools like Mount Edgecombe. And if you've gone through the loneliness and being away from home and the big school at West High, University of Alaska isn't all that different.
Mm-hmm.
So now, this is the interesting thing about research and why it doesn't prove anything for once and for all, because friendliness could again become a very important problem. Now the high school situation has changed, and kids coming from the villages go to small high schools. They don't have the experience that the previous generation did in these big high schools. So the next generation coming to the campus, friendliness could again become a real difficulty.
But there seems no reason why a small village high school could not prepare students academically, and that's what the study pinpointed as a reason for non-success, is that students, Native students in particular, perhaps were not as well prepared to take on the academic workload.
Well, what we kept finding in this particular study was a lot of kids who were trying their darndest to do well in college, but just didn't have the preparation in high school to make it. Now, this was also true of non-Native kids. Those non-Native kids who came with very, very weak academic skills also had difficulty. We had many cases of students in our study, non-Natives, who also came from small villages in Alaska and were just not oriented towards college and dropped out and felt miserable about it. But in this case, it's more the Native kids who come from the villages and have the problems of the small high schools. The university makes efforts to have special tutoring services to help with courses and to provide special courses which teach kids study skills, but you can't do in one semester what high school hasn't done in 4 years. Also, a Native freshman or a non-Native freshman is away from home for the first time quite often and is adjusting to the whole college world. So there are a lot of pressures on kids besides just keeping up with your studies.
Now, are these kids told that they, in the rural high schools and in the villages, told that they should go to college? Are they pressured into coming to the university and then sort of been left flat?
It varies with the high school. Some of the high schools, the teachers are oriented towards college and some of them aren't. You can find many instances of kids who've come here to college despite teachers who wanted to track them into vocational training. But you also find the opposite problem, and since we saw the kids that came and those that didn't, we were more aware of it, where we would find kids who had been told in high school that they were good and they could make it, and they were good if they'd had the proper training, but they didn't get it in high school. All they got was kind of flattery and encouragement. So they arrived at campus, and they'd really try hard those first few weeks, And then finally it would dawn on them that they just weren't going to make it, and they'd get depressed and they'd get withdrawn and they'd stop trying and they'd start dropping classes and they'd go home.
Mm-hmm. It's not a case of not wanting to or not trying. These kids that came, and I think there's a statistic that says that a native freshman who entered the Fairbanks campus in 1974 with low academic skills had less than a 1 in 3 chance of succeeding during the first college semester.
And I think it was remarkable that 1 out of 3 made it, and it's a tribute to the effort that they put in, because they did it on guts.
Just determination that they were going to stick it out.
Determination. I've never seen some of the kids work as hard as some of the kids in that study. And you really felt sorry and angry at the preparation they had received, that it should be necessary for them to work as hard as they did.
That brings us to the conclusion of the study, which I can read part of. It says, to increase the chances for success of Native students, high schools must give serious attention to increasing the quality of academic preparation, especially for those rural students interested in college. That puts the, I don't want to say blame, but it puts the ball back into the to the court of the rural high schools.
The high schools are facing a difficult situation now. Instead of the large boarding schools, which weren't doing very good things for the kids socially and emotionally, we now have small village high schools. And it's a trade-off. You know, you never can have a perfect world. These small village high schools keep the kids at home. They keep them near their family. The kids help with the chores. They're not torn away from their communities. But it's very hard to provide a high-quality education if your high school has 10 kids or 3 kids in it. And what if only one of those kids is interested in college? Correspondence courses aren't a very good answer. You can't provide physics, geometry, and all these other specialized subjects too easily to that one kid. So it's a dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways out of the dilemma. For example, students who are very serious about college might consider in their junior or senior year being sent by their district to a school like West High for that extra preparation. Then they're not, you know, leaving home at 13, they're leaving home at 18, which is, they're more mature, anybody is. They can handle it. Other possibilities are special teachers for the gifted who could work with that particular age group, or the student could be brought to the regional center or sent to the university during the summer. There are ways out, there are delivery systems, but it has to be considered an important problem.
And there has to be some awareness that that problem exists, which is the purpose, I suppose, then, of the study.
Sure. The purpose of the study, it was a small study and an exploratory study, was to draw people's attention to the problem. If it isn't confirmed by their experience, then it isn't reasonable. But I think if they look at the rates of return of the young people that the region is sending to college, they'll come to see that there is a problem and that there is something they can do about it.
Professor Judith Kleinfeld, psychology professor at the Institute of Social and Economic Research on the Fairbanks campus. And for Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.